This is Gulf Coast Live. I'm Julie Glenn. Later this hour, we'll hear from Republican State Representative Jeanette Nunez, who is Ron DeSantis' running mate in tomorrow's midterm election. But first, voters in Florida are being asked to decide on 12 amendments to the state's constitution during this year's general midterm election. Two of them are citizen-initiated amendments, three of them are legislative referrals, and the other seven were referred by the Florida Constitution Revision Commission, which meets every 20 years. On today's show, we're playing a roundup of stories produced by public radio reporters around the state about some of the proposed amendments on this year's ballot. We're not taking calls today, but if you'd like to participate via social media, you can find us on Facebook at WGCU Public Media, and on Twitter, we're at WGCU using the hashtag GCO. First up is Amendment 1, which is one of the legislative referrals. It would increase the amount of a home's value exempted from property tax, which might seem like a straightforward proposal, but as Steve Newborn reports from Tampa, the facts around Amendment 1 are not that simple.
It might seem like the easiest question on this year's crowded ballot. Do you want a property cut in your property taxes? After all, why would anybody say no to that? But when it comes to Amendment 1, the reality might be a little more complicated. First, some homeowners would increase the amount of their home that's tax-free. Their school taxes wouldn't be affected. But Hillsborough County property appraiser Bob Enriquez says it's a common misconception who would benefit.
I think that people think that the additional $25,000 homestead is going to all homesteaded property owners, and it's not. It's only those that have a property that's worth between $100,000 and $125,000 or more.
Now let's hear from the two sides. First, the people who put Amendment 1 on the ballot, like State Senator Jeff Brandis of Pinellas County.
Look, the economy's been great. Property values are rising. And this is really allowing people to keep their own money. This is really a whole amendment is focused on allowing people's hard-earned money to be kept by them and not by the government. You know, it should be hard to take your money.
So why would anybody be opposed to that? Amber Hughes of the Florida League of Cities says its passage would mean local governments would lose money, a lot of money, meaning they would have to choose whether to cut services or raise taxes.
The legislators that passed this would tell you that this is a tax cut, but at the end of the day, while there might be revenue impact, it really is a tax shift.
A state analysis looked at the impact of Amendment 1 and estimates that across Florida, cities and counties would see more than $500 million chopped from their tax rolls. Enriquez says in Hillsborough, that could add up to a shortfall of $23 million. Sarasota County officials say they would face a potential deficit of nearly $8 million in 3 years. And in Pinellas County, there's estimates of $42 million being lost every year. In South Florida, Palm Beach County commissioners are already looking at asking voters to approve an additional sales tax to pay for emergency services. Miami-Dade County officials are considering privatizing some bus routes to save money. Hughes says wealthier homeowners would get a break at the expense of renters and people whose homes aren't worth so much.
The way that our property tax structure works is that when someone wins, everyone else loses. And that's exactly what this does. This is just one more piece of property tax legislation that picks winners and losers.
She says the winners would be the minority of people whose homes are worth at least $125,000. In wealthier counties like Enriquez's Hillsborough, that's roughly half the homes. It would save them an average of $250. But a study from the League of Cities says look at a poor rural county like Madison in the Panhandle. There are fewer than 800 of its more than 4,000 homes would get a break. And Enriquez says those smaller counties and cities may already be maxed out on how much they can tax.
Depending on your taxing authority, you may not have the ability to raise your millage anymore to make up for the shortfall if that's what you choose to do. So then you'll have to cut services in some way.
And he says it's not easy to raise taxes in notoriously tax-averse Florida. But that's just the point, says State Senator Brandis. It should be hard to raise taxes.
Yeah, the simple truth is that most of these local governments, just because of the increase in property value for them, most of them will be held harmless, especially in the larger communities. They're still going to see more revenue coming in, even after this constitutional amendment passes, because of the increase in value in properties.
So deciding how to vote on Amendment 1 maybe isn't such a simple decision after all. I'm Steve Newborn in Tampa.
Amendment 2 is also a legislative referral. It came from the Florida State Legislature. This amendment affects annual non-homestead parcel assessment increases that are set to expire on January 1, 2019. It puts a permanent cap of 10% for non-homestead properties. It wouldn't change the law, but would extend an existing cap that was set to expire at the end of the year. Next up is Amendment 3. It's one of the two citizen-initiated proposals. The business of betting has a lot riding on the results of tomorrow's election. Amendment 3 is a measure that may give Florida voters a final say on if and where casinos will be built. WGCU's Andrea Perdomo has more on that.
Currently, the state legislature decides whether or not a new gambling facility will open. Amendment 3 proposes to give that power to voters.
People in Pensacola or people in Jacksonville or even people in Miami-Dade get to dictate what happens in Lee County and Collier County, and that's not really fair.
Izzy Havanick is a spokesperson for the Naples-Fort Myers Dog Track and the Magic City Casino in Miami. He also chairs the political committee No on 3. He says the proposal takes away local control and wonders at the motivation behind the two biggest backers of this amendment.
The Seminole Tribe of Indians and Disney World have put over $50 million into a constitutional amendment and have yet to tell anybody in the state of Florida why they're doing it.
The Political Action Committee supporting Amendment 3 is Voters in Charge and is funded by Disney at almost $20 million and the Seminole Tribe at more than $16 million. The latter has had a monopoly on Vegas-style gambling since 2010 as part of a 20-year deal with the state. Last month, Seminole Gaming CEO Jim Allen spoke with our Miami sister station WLRN's Tom Hudson, saying that the tribe pays almost $400 million to the state every year for that exclusivity.
If the state wants to expand that, which we completely respect, that's fine. But then obviously that's when the compact payments of revenue share come into a conversation.
Allen added that whether dealing with the state legislature or the public at large, moving a gambling conversation forward is always difficult.
Whether you need 60% of the voters or you need the majority of the House and Senate and the governor to sign, whenever you're discussing gaming in the state of Florida, I think it's a very emotional topic and it's not an easy thing to get a deal that makes everyone feel comfortable.
For its part, Havanick's group opposing Amendment 3 has raised less than $1 million in this David and Goliath fight, but he's not backing down.
I fundamentally believe that monopolies and winners and losers don't belong in any constitution.
Amendment 3 would need approval by more than 60% of voters to become part of the state's constitution. Andrea Perdomo, WGCU News, Fort Myers.
If you're just joining the show today, we're learning about the proposed amendments to the state constitution that Florida voters are being asked to decide on during the midterm election tomorrow. Today's show is pre-taped, but if you'd like to weigh in via Facebook or Twitter, you can find us on Facebook at WGCU Public Media or on Twitter. We're at WGCU using the hashtag GCL. Next up is Amendment 4, which is the other citizen-initiated proposal. Florida is one of the strictest states when it comes to restoring the right to vote for people with felony convictions. They do not automatically get the right to vote back after they've served their time. That's 1.5 million Floridians who cannot vote. Amendment 4 would restore that right for former felons. It has wide bipartisan support and very little organized opposition. Nadege Green introduces us to some of the people Amendment 4 affects.
Good afternoon, sir.
Alicia Trammell walks up to a dark gray house in Little Haiti in Miami.
Good afternoon. My name is Alicia.
My name is Lucy Rigot.
Hi, Miss Lucy.
Hi.
Amendment 4. You know what that is?
No.
Let me tell you what it is. It is the restoration of rights of ex-felons who've served their time and are back in the community.
Mm-hmm.
And it restores their rights so they'll be able to vote and be accounted for.
Trammell has been canvassing several days a week from North Miami-Dade to Little Haiti. She's a volunteer with the Political Action Committee for Color of Change, a racial justice group. She can't vote because of a felony conviction for armed robbery.
22. I was 22 when I was arrested.
She served 1 year. She's 48 years old now and says it feels like she's still being punished for something she did more than 20 years ago.
Being a part of society, it's my right and I want it. So they didn't stop me from paying taxes when I got out.
Trammell was at a Popeyes last year when a man approached her holding a clipboard.
And he had a petition. He was like, sign this petition to help felons get their rights restored. I was like, wow, about time, because I knew other states, it was automatic.
That petition got more than 800,000 signatures to get the amendment on the ballot. Some critics say Amendment 4 doesn't go far enough. people convicted of murder or a felony sex crime would not automatically have their rights restored. And in some of the political races, this issue has split candidates along party lines. In the governor's race, Republican Ron DeSantis does not support automatically restoring the right to vote for former felons. Democratic candidate Andrew Gillum does. As Daniels walks door to door, she says if she could vote, she would cast her ballot for candidates who care about quality and affordable health care for everyone. She's HIV positive and helps educate other people about living with HIV.
So hopefully they will go out and hopefully it'll pass, because that will be a wonderful thing. And then next time I can actually be one of the ones who are actually canvassing and voting.
Amendment 4 needs 60% of the vote to pass. Under the current process, after someone with a felony conviction gets out and completes the terms of their release, there's a 5 to 7 year waiting period before they can apply to be allowed to vote again. And then it can take years before getting a meeting in Tallahassee with the Clemency Board. That's the governor and the state cabinet.
My mom got out of prison when I was 18. I'm 39, going to be 40 this year, and my mom still don't have her rights back.
Dexter Gunder is walking around Liberty City in Miami, carrying boxes of pizza and Amendment 4 flyers. He was released from prison a year ago. He's working with the Florida Rights Restoration Coalition, a statewide advocacy group run by people with felony convictions. He stops where a man who goes by Mr. Mack is sitting on the sidewalk in a fold-out chair.
That's why I need you to go vote for me, since you can vote.
I'm gonna get it, brother. All you ain't got to worry about it. I got songs that fellas and stuff, man.
Earlier, Gunder had set up in an empty lot about two blocks away with a tent, music, pizza, and the stack of flyers about Amendment 4. But after a light rain shower, no one showed up. He looked and saw people down the block, so he grabbed the pizza and flyers and started walking with five other volunteers.
Like these local guys sitting on the corner right here, that's the ones we're trying to reach, the people who don't know.
He stops in a small park made up of a few benches, and he meets a man named Darius Randall.
Well, blacks, they say our voices don't count, but it really do, it counts.
Randall also can't vote because of a felony conviction. This issue disproportionately impacts black adults. In Florida, more than one in five black voters can't cast ballots because of a felony conviction.
Feel like we're the lowest on food chain, but it shouldn't be like that.
Randall promises to tell his family to go out and vote on his behalf. If Amendment 4 doesn't pass, for now, the clemency process would remain as is. The next governor could make changes to how it works. There's also a lawsuit before the 11th Circuit Court of Appeals challenging the current process. I'm Nadege Green in Miami.
Florida is one of only a few states that doesn't automatically restore voting rights to felons who've completed their sentences. The fight goes back years now, and it's been waged both in court and in the court of public opinion. But as Lynn Hatter reports, there's a divide inside the groups that are pushing hardest for the change.
When Florida Governor Rick Scott took office 8 years ago, he and the rest of the cabinet stopped a policy that had streamlined the restoration process of voting rights to felons. In the years since, only about 3,000 of those people have had their rights restored. The rest, well...
I think all of us would rather help you, but this record is awfully difficult to say, did you change your life? Didn't look like it.
That's Scott in September after hearing the case of Jamel Jerome Filler, a school teacher and habitual traffic offender. Filler did not get his rights restored, and he's among an estimated 1.5 million Floridians in the same predicament. The state has been sued over its restoration policy, and earlier this year, a federal court determined the system was unconstitutional. Felons have to wait 5 years before they can apply to the state's clemency board, and that board decides whether to approve or reject their petitions. The board is made up of the governor, attorney general, agriculture commissioner, and chief financial officer. Amendment 4 on the upcoming ballot would take away most of the clemency board's power over that process. It would automatically restore rights to most of the people who have completed their sentences. Most, but not all.
If you look at the history of voting rights in this country, no one has ever sought to extend the franchise at the expense of someone else.
Paul Wright is the founder of Prison Legal News. He's also a felon, having served more than 20 years in prison for a murder conviction.
You know, Martin Luther King didn't say, you know, let's just allow black people to vote, or let's just have some black people vote, but not, say, dark-skinned black people. And more importantly, He didn't seek voting rights for black people at the expense of anyone else.
Wright argues excluding murderers and sex offenders pits felons against each other and perpetuates stereotypes.
What on earth does, what on earth does having been convicted of murder 31 years ago have to do with whether or not I can vote? I'm actually more concerned about government officials that are corrupt, that sell out their public office and betray the trust of the taxpayers that send them to that office. Maybe people that are convicted of voting fraud, but all those people under Amendment 4 get their voting rights back.
Still, the exclusion of people convicted of murder and sex offenses is a popular idea, and it's also championed by candidates running for statewide offices. Amendment 4 has been heavily supported by the American Civil Liberties Union and the group that led the citizen drive to get it onto the ballot, Floridians for a Fair Democracy. The campaign has raised and spent millions of dollars on the effort and still has a few million dollars in the bank ahead of Election Day. According to recent polls, Amendment 4 is also one of the few that voters are likely to approve next month. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Lynn Hatter.
On today's show, we're listening to stories produced by public radio reporters around the state about the proposed amendments to the state constitution that Florida voters are being asked to decide on tomorrow. This is pre-taped today, so we're not taking calls, but if you'd like to make a comment via Facebook or Twitter, you can find us on Facebook at WGCU Public Media. Or on Twitter, we're at WGCU using the hashtag GCO. Florida voters are deciding whether a list of victims' rights should be added to the Constitution. That's what's promised in Amendment 6, known as Marcy's Law. As Lindsay Kilbride reports, supporters say it balances out the rights of victims and the accused, while critics of Amendment 6 call it misleading. And a final note, this story contains descriptions of violence that some listeners may find too disturbing.
It was March 23, 2017. Michael Lyles found his wife on the kitchen floor of their Jacksonville home.
He brutalized her. This man beat her with a golf club, if you can imagine.
Her face had been shattered.
Almost severed the ears that I used to whisper into.
Deborah Lyles was an elementary school music teacher, and this was actually the second time she was attacked at home by different people in a bizarre lightning strikes twice scenario. This time, she didn't survive.
I still find myself constantly reaching for her.
Lyles then became involved with the Justice Coalition, which provides services to victims and their families, leading the organization before he passed, and he was advocating for Amendment 6.
We have been so far through 18 hearings.
Court proceedings involving the man charged with killing Deborah Lyles.
Not one of them have we ever been notified.
Currently, the Florida Constitution says victims have the right to be informed, present, and heard when relevant at all crucial stages of criminal proceedings. But Amendment 6 would replace that with a lengthy list of rights, including accurate and timely notice of all public proceedings like pleas, trials, and sentencing, plus the right to be protected from the accused and for judges to consider the safety of victims and their family when setting bail. 11 rights total. Critics of the amendment say many of those rights are already in state law, but Lyle said from his experience, they're not being enforced.
That's the critical piece that makes it so important for it to be in the Constitution. Right now, in that particular set of circumstances, the response was, we're very sorry. That's not an acceptable answer when that kind of right has been trampled.
He wanted constitutional strength.
What is addressed in this amendment is that victims need to be provided consideration and dignity. Marcy's Law is basically saying we want equal rights, not superior rights.
Marcy's Law is named after a California victim, stalked and killed by her ex-boyfriend. A week after her death, her mother was confronted by her accused killer in the grocery store. She didn't know he had been released on bail. This prompted victims' rights to be added to California's constitution, and other states have followed. That's actually one reason Gainesville prosecutor Bill Cervone is against Amendment 6. He calls it a
concerted, well-funded personal agenda coming from folks from out of state.
And he says,
most fundamental, I do not believe that it actually serves any real purpose that does not already exist in Florida law.
Which is where he believes these types of rights should stay. Lawmakers can tweak statutes every year, but the Constitution,
it is very difficult to change or amend or even repeal it.
He also argues the amendment would infringe on the rights of the accused to a fair trial and fair punishment. For one, it imposes 2- and 5-year limits on different types of appeals. Cervone says that's a very short time in the legal world, and overburdened appeals courts simply can't process cases fast enough.
And I will guarantee you that the legislature is never going to fund enough people at those levels to meet the potential demands those time frames would impose.
Overall, he thinks Marcy's law tilts the balance too far in victims' favor.
The reason victims do not control a criminal prosecution is that prosecution must be emotionless, must consider all sides of the issue, including what you need to do to best punish the defendant while still best protecting society.
Amendment 6 also poses other questions to voters. Its passage would up the mandatory retirement age for judges from 70 to 75 and require judges to interpret laws themselves rather than rely on state agencies' interpretations of them. Unlike Cervone, 13 other current and former Florida prosecutors support Amendment 6, along with a bipartisan group of lawmakers. The amendment needs 60% approval to pass. Election Day is November 6. I'm Lindsay Kilbride in Jacksonville.
Amendment 7 begins the foray into amendments with many, sometimes seemingly unrelated parts. This amendment, if passed, would require employers to provide death benefits to surviving spouses of first responders who are killed while engaged in official duties and to surviving spouses of active duty U.S. Armed Forces members who are accidentally killed or unlawfully and intentionally killed. The same amendment then shifts to higher education. It would require, in the state's constitution, a 9-member vote of a school's board of trustees and a 12-member vote of its board of governors to increase a college fee. It would also place the current structure of the state's system of higher education in the Florida Constitution. You won't see an Amendment 8 on the ballot. It was stricken by the Florida Supreme Court. And that brings us to Amendment 9, another bundled amendment around which there has been some drama. This one also came from the Florida Constitution Revision Commission. It contains two provisions relating to two unrelated topics, banning both vaping and coastal drilling. Health News Florida's Sammy Mack takes it from here.
This is WLRN News. I'm Sammy Mack. There's been some serious drama playing out around the constitutional amendments on Florida's ballots, particularly the bundled amendments. These are the ballot items that lump together more than one issue, like Amendment 9, which bans both vaping and coastal drilling. Yep, bans on vaping and coastal drilling at the same time. The framers of Amendment 9 say both of these proposals intersect with health and the environment. A lawsuit claiming they don't belong together made its way to the state Supreme Court. The court ruled that this bundled amendment, number nine, can stay.
Number nine.
Which works out because the ballots were already printed with 9 on them. Right, lots of drama. So, we're going to take a minute and just run headfirst into that drama.
Presenting Amendment 9 in 2X.
Seeing as voters will have to weigh both elements of Amendment 9 at the same time, we asked some of the actors with stakes in it to lay out the cases for and against each piece.
My name is Manly Fuller. I'm the president of the Florida Wildlife Federation.
I'm Ned Bowman. I'm the executive director of the Florida Petroleum Marketing Association.
My name is Donna Lundy. I'm a volunteer with the American Cancer Society Cancer Action Network.
My name is Alex Clark. I'm the CEO of the Consumer Advocates for Smoke-Free Alternatives Association.
Without further ado,
Amendment 9, Act 1, the drilling ban. Prohibits drilling for the exploration.
This is the ballot language.
Oil and natural gas beneath all state-owned waters between the Nene High waterline and the state's outermost territorial boundaries.
Center stage in this act of Amendment 9, Florida's natural resources. This half of the proposal puts a ban on drilling in state waters in the Florida Constitution. Enter the impassioned pleas of people like Manly Fuller of the Florida Wildlife Federation.
We would like to vote for Amendment 9 because it helps protect Florida's water quality in our marine waters.
Now, dear listener, there is currently a federal moratorium on drilling that includes Florida's coastal waters. Regulation got even tighter after the 2010 Deepwater Horizon disaster, killed 11 people on a rig and spilled millions of gallons of oil off Louisiana's coast and into Florida's waters. But last year, the president issued an executive order encouraging more exploration off the coasts.
Could you imagine how catastrophic something like that would be in Florida's coastal waters? If you had a problem or a spill, you wouldn't have time to react to it.
Amendment 9 would, no matter what the feds do, prevent drilling in state waters, about 3 miles off the Gulf Coast and 10 miles off the Atlantic coast.
Our goal is so that we have healthy fish and wildlife populations and habitat. And that's a challenge in this state, which has tremendous growth pressure. So the last thing we need is industrialization of our coastal economy. It needs to stay a nature-based economy.
Now we arrive at Amendment 9,
Act 1, Scene 2.
The case to vote no on Amendment 9 because of the offshore drilling ban. Center stage, still Florida's natural resources. Spoken for here by
Ned Bowman
with the Florida Petroleum Marketing Association.
We represent over 7,000 convenience stores that sell gasoline in the state of Florida. We think as long as the drilling is done responsibly, we are for the drilling.
So, against this amendment. Bowman thinks about different disasters when it comes to Amendment 9, like when 6.5 million Floridians were ordered to evacuate during Hurricane Irma.
They left on gasoline and diesel fuel. You know, if everybody went out and they banned drilling, we wouldn't have any product. We wouldn't have any energy.
He preempts suggestions about renewable energy by pointing to Hurricane Michael.
You had 100 to 150 mile an hour winds going through that had snapped the trees. So those solar panels would be blown away. And then what do you have left? You don't have any power.
Okay, intermission, where sea meets air. You need a snack? You want a snack break? Now's a good time. You got a sec. Remember, Amendment 9 would ban offshore drilling and vaping in Florida. The vote is either a yes to all of it or a no to all of it. So, now let's consider the second half.
Amendment 9, Act 2. Adds use of vapor-generating electronic
Again,
devices.
This is the ballot language.
Prohibition of tobacco smoking in enclosed indoor workplaces with exceptions from its more restrictive local vapor ordinances.
The players here, the air we breathe, and personal freedom.
Act 2, Scene 1.
Defending the air is Donna Lundy.
With the American Cancer Society Cancer Action Network. The case for Amendment 9 basically comes down to, do you want to breathe fresh air in public places, public indoor places?
You see, Florida has an existing ban on smoking at work in a lot of public places. Amendment 9 would add constitutional language about e-cigarettes, a technology that didn't exist when Florida passed the Clean Indoor Air Act of 1985.
No one should have to choose between earning a paycheck and breathing clean air. With e-cigarettes, the research is more recent because they haven't been out there that prolonged period of time. But we know that some of the chemicals in electronic cigarettes can be quite harmful if ingested firsthand and or secondhand.
Amendment 9, Act 2, Scene 2, is the case to vote against Amendment 9 because of the vaping ban. Here, the lights go up on personal freedom as people like Alex Clark of the Consumer Advocates for Smoke-Free Alternatives Association enter the stage.
We are opposed to Amendment 9 and recommend people vote against it. First of all, individual business owners should have the right to choose whether they allow vaping or not.
Is assessment of the risk of secondhand vapor exposure lower than Lundy's?
I would say nominal. We actually feel that there's a public health benefit. It demonstrates to smokers that there's a product out there that has some sort of advantage over smoking. They don't have to step outside. They don't have to feel isolated. They can stay indoors and be with their community and enjoy using nicotine. You know, there's a visual component in that smokers can see people vaping and become curious about the products. And those people who smoke are more likely to try vaping, make quit attempts, and improve their health.
And scene. There you have it. Amendment 9 explained in 2 acts. There is a 3rd act, of course, but that one plays out in the voting booth. To paraphrase Shakespeare at the end of Hamlet, go bid the voters vote. For Health News Florida, I'm Sammy Mack in Miami.
Amendment 10 would mandate a State Department of Veteran Affairs and a State Anti-Terrorism Office. It would also change the calendar of state legislative sessions. And lastly, it would make fundamental changes to the way counties are run. Danny Rivero of member station WLRN in Miami and Matthew Petty from our sister station WMFE in Orlando tell us It's that last question that has county leaders in Miami-Dade, Broward, and Volusia up in arms.
There's a long history behind why Miami-Dade County doesn't have an elected sheriff, but here's an abridged version. In 1966, the sheriff was indicted after a grand jury found the office was essentially running a criminal organization. The office was protecting illegal gambling operations, taking hush money from brothels, and was even extorting illegal abortion providers for protection.
Yeah, it was bad. Voters decided to get rid of the sheriff and instead have an appointed chief of police.
And since then, we have what's considered to be one of the finest police departments in the nation.
Miami-Dade Mayor Carlos Jimenez is not happy with Amendment 10, which would force every county in the state to have five elected officials.
Besides the sheriff, that's a property appraiser, tax collector, supervisor of elections, and a clerk of courts.
Miami-Dade is the only county in Florida that doesn't have an elected sheriff. If Amendment 10 passes, the county would also have to elect a supervisor of elections and a tax collector, which the mayor now appoints.
Maybe some people wanted more political positions, more elected positions here in this county. Being a politician myself, I don't think we need any more politicians. Thank you very much.
There would be more elected leaders if this amendment passes. And one of them would be running the Miami-Dade Police Department, the biggest in the state.
You either have faith in the people's ability to make decisions or you do not.
Michael Atkinson is the sheriff of Walton County in the Florida Panhandle. He's a former president of the Florida Sheriff's Association. They've been pushing Amendment 10.
That's really what this boils down to at a lot of levels. Protecting your individual right to make decisions and to balance this power.
Years ago in Tallahassee, Atkinson was an appointed chief of police, like in Miami-Dade.
I will tell you, having done both, you would think that being a sheriff is more political. I'll tell you, it's less political.
I think that's ridiculous because when they're all politicians.
Miami-Dade Mayor Jimenez says elected sheriffs are some of the most powerful politicians in their counties.
Volusia County Sheriff Mike Chitwood doesn't feel so powerful, and that's why he's supporting Amendment 10.
I mean, it is so ridiculous here that I can't even though I have reward money in my budget, I can't post reward money in a homicide without going through county council.
Chitwood was elected, but he still has to go through the county commission to get approval for how he spends his budget.
That's written into the county charter, the document that outlines how local governments are run.
There are 20 other charters in the state of Florida. Not one of them eviscerates the elected officials like Volusia County does.
Who approved his budget the last 2 years? The county council. Unanimous. We gave him everything he wanted.
Ed Kelly is Volusia County Council Chair. He says Volusia residents voted for the charter, and it's worked well for nearly 50 years.
There are a lot of reasons Kelly doesn't like this amendment, especially that it would limit county oversight of the sheriff and other elected officials. Disputes over the sheriff's budget would have to be settled in Tallahassee. These elections get partisan, and setting up these new offices of tax collector, property appraiser, and sheriff would cost the county money.
This sheriff feels that it gives him more control, but I want to remind him that the governor also has to answer to people on his budget, and so does the president of the United States.
To put it his way, Sheriff Chitwood says this dynamic isn't fair. Other county sheriffs get to decide how they spend their budget. Why not Volusia?
I don't see Flagler County, Brevard, or Palm Beach sliding into the Atlantic Ocean.
I don't know why we're having this conversation.
Broward County's top administrator, Bertha Henry, is livid that voters from across the state will decide how her local government is structured. Instead, there'd be a tax collector, who Henry's office would no longer directly oversee.
We believe that we have a government that works. It's been in place since 1975, and we'd like to retain that.
Both sides say they want accountability.
But they disagree about what that means.
Is accountability giving people a direct say on more county offices and letting them vote them out if they're unhappy?
Or does accountability mean giving the county government day-to-day oversight of those offices?
All that is just one of the four questions in Amendment 10. I'm Matthew Petty, reporting from Volusia County.
And I'm Danny Rivero, reporting from Miami and Fort Lauderdale.
Amendment 11 contains revisions to existing law. Approval of this amendment would repeal a constitutional provision that keeps foreign-born people who are ineligible for citizenship from owning, inheriting, disposing, and possessing property in Florida. It would also repeal a constitutional provision that called for a high-speed monorail between large cities in Florida. That was a voter-backed initiative that was approved in 1999, set to begin in 2003, never got off the ground. It was reapproved in 2004 and eventually repealed in 2005. This amendment would also delete the constitutional provision that a change to a criminal statute does not affect the prosecution of a crime if it was committed before the change was made to the specific law. If Amendment 12 is passed, public officials would not be allowed to be paid lobbyists while in office or for 6 years after holding public office. It also, quote, prohibits public officials from using the office to obtain a disproportionate benefit, end quote. Last up is Amendment 13, which was also proposed by the Constitution Revision Commission. In order for card rooms to operate in Florida, they are required to have dog or horse racing or hialeah courts. Amendment 13 would end live greyhound racing in the state while leaving the poker tables intact. WGCU's Andrea Perdomo reports.
There are more than 150 cars in the parking lot of the Naples-Fort Myers Greyhound Track in Bonita Springs. But there are no dogs racing today. At this track, greyhounds only race during season, from December through May. But people are still here, playing poker or betting on simulcast races. No barking from dogs here today, and no comment from the owner of this track on Amendment 13, which would ban greyhound racing in the state. Much of the noise on this amendment is coming from people talking about the dogs. Some saying greyhounds get the best possible care, like pro racing advocate Sharon Dipple.
Amendment 13 is what I call a feel-good amendment. It makes people feel good that they are going to help these greyhounds.
Others say greyhound racing is inhumane.
Anyone that loves their dog would not put them out on a dog track knowing the huge risk of catastrophic injury.
Sonia Stradiman has worked with retired dogs for years and claims that the dogs are mistreated, drugged, and frequently injured.
They're running 45 miles an hour. They collide. They trip, fall, roll. They break their necks. They break their backs. They break their legs.
Injuries aren't reported to the Florida Department of Business and Professional Regulation, which oversees licensing for the tracks. But drug test results are. Of the more than 37,000 urine samples analyzed last year from racing dogs, 81 were positive for stimulants like caffeine and cocaine. On the pro racing side, another argument is that ending dog racing in Florida would close two-thirds of the tracks in the nation.
Over 3,000 people are going to be negatively affected. People who print for the programs, people who provide food for the tracks, people who provide food for the dogs, people that actually work on the tracks and in the kennels that will become unemployed.
But according to a state report from 2017, the trend over the last decade has shown declining receipts. Since the fiscal year ending in 2008, the number of people paying to get into all parimutuel betting facilities in the state went from 1.4 million to 333,000 last year. State income from parimutuel betting has dropped more than 57% in that time frame. A year and a half ago, Izzy Havanick, the spokesperson for this track here in Bonita Springs, was quoted in an article by the Washington Post saying he welcomed the idea of dropping dog racing. But now that Amendment 13 will be placed in voters' hands, Havanick says his organization takes no position and has no comment. What he does want to talk about is Amendment 3, the other gambling proposal on the ballot.
I will talk on this all day long. Amendment 3 is a bad deal for the state of Florida. It takes away local control.
Amendment 3 would leave it up to Florida voters to decide when new casinos can get a license and where they can open in the state. Both gambling amendments would need approval by more than 60% of voters to become part of the state's constitution. Andrea Perdomo, WGCU News, Bonita Springs.
That's all the time we have for this part of the show, so we're going to take a quick break. When we return, our conversation with Jeanette Nunez. The Republican candidate for lieutenant governor has served as member of the Florida House of Representatives for 8 years. We'll find out what she thinks she can bring to the governor's mansion after this. I'm Julie Glenn, and you're listening to Gulf Coast Live. Stay with us.